From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Coming up this week, Governor Cuomo appoints a new tax-cutting commission. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on the governor's appointments, and we'll have reaction to the federal government shutdown and its impact on New York. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Governor Andrew Cuomo is appointing a new tax-cutting commission that he's charged with finding ways of slicing state revenues by $2 to $3 billion next year. An update now from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
Cuomo turned to the man who beat his father in the 1994 governor's race, George Pataki, to co-chair the commission. Pataki, a Republican, defeated Mario Cuomo on a platform that included tax cuts. Pataki, who says the state spends too much and costs too much, says he's happy to serve on the commission, but at first thought a mistake had been made.
I have to confess, when I got the call from Governor Cuomo, I wasn't sure he had dialed the right number.
Cuomo praised Pataki, saying he was the right person for the job.
We gave it to the best people imaginable, the best experts you could find, representing different political parties, different political perspectives.
The announcement made in Westchester County comes on the same week that Cuomo's job performance reached below 50% for the first time since he's taken office. A Siena poll found Cuomo with a 49% popularity rating, says Siena's Steve Greenberg.
It is the weakest job performance he's had since he's been governor. Right now, 49% of voters say he's doing an excellent or good job as governor, compared to 50% who say he's doing only a fair or poor job.
Most politicians consider a rating below 50% to be troublesome when facing re-election, although so far Cuomo has no announced opponent for the 2014 governor's race. The inclusion of Pataki, who remains popular, could help the governor win back upstate and more conservative voters who have turned against Cuomo in recent months. The other co-chair of the tax commission is a popular figure in New York City, former state controller Carl McCall. McCall would likely have defeated Andrew Cuomo in the 2002 governor's race. McCall was leading in the polls when Cuomo dropped out of the Democratic primary 1 week before voting day. McCall, reading from a prepared text, praised Governor Cuomo, saying the state is in the best financial shape he's seen in years.
Under Governor Cuomo's leadership, New York has managed to turn the tide on its economic situation.
Cuomo compared his choosing of a bipartisan tax-cutting commission to the gridlock in Washington, where the government has been shut down since Tuesday. Cuomo says in New York, during his term in office, the state has had the exact opposite experience.
And when you have people who choose to argue rather than finding ways to come to a compromise, situation like Washington, everybody loses. Everybody loses because literally you just don't move forward.
Neither Cuomo, McCall, nor Pataki answered reporters' questions afterward. Cuomo's tax commission was praised by business groups, as well as the leader of the state's Republican Party, who said it was about time. Progressive groups, however, say they find the announcement odd, and they say the appointment of former Governor Pataki flies in the face of a desire for a progressive tax policy. The announcement can be seen as the beginning of Governor Cuomo's 2014 re-election campaign. The governor says tax cuts will be the centerpiece of his agenda for the next year. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now is Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Alan, as we just heard from our Karen DeWitt, Governor Cuomo is appointing a new tax-cutting commission that he's charged with finding ways of slicing state revenues $2 to $3 billion a year. One of those names, well, his father's former nemesis, former governor of New York, Republican George Pataki.
You know, it's interesting about this guy, Cuomo. When he came into office, he restyled himself as sort of a libertarian, you know, tough on financing and very, very concerned about how much people were paying in taxes, and also a social liberal. And he did very well. Rupert Murdoch and Murdoch's henchmen were all very supportive of him. Then he took a turn and he went sort of to the left a little bit. And he began to create himself into a different kind of guy. And he got very poor grades upstate. So he began to spend all his time upstate. Now, he turns around after having made friends with Pataki, and he goes back to the beginning, David. He did well with the conservative crowd, so now he's going back to the conservative crowd, the fiscal conservative crowd. He's saying, well, maybe I took a wrong turn here. Maybe people perceive me as being too liberal, and that's what made my father lose in New York. So now he appoints who? George Pataki? I mean, you want to talk about cold meat, there's the guy. You know, even the New York POST, which is an awful newspaper, gave Pataki just a little bit of attention for having been appointed to this commission. So what I'm thinking is that Andrew Cuomo is now going back to basics. He is going to try to cut taxes, but that is going to get him into trouble. First of all, you got Bill de Blasio coming on as the new mayor of New York, probably, assuming he wins the election, which I think he will. And he's a progressive, and he's going to want to make changes so that school children get a better break, tax the rich. This is exactly antithetical to Andrew Cuomo's way of doing things, at least the new Cuomo way of doing things. And so we can see that a power struggle will be set up between the state government with Andrew Cuomo and the mayor of New York, de Blasio, who is a progressive. And you can just see that coming. So the fact that he's going back to being a fiscal conservative and emphasizing that means that people like the teachers unions and the people for fiscal equality and for all of the people who are doing their thing in terms of trying to get school kids an even break, that money he is now calling for taking out of the state budget is going to have to come from somewhere. And those people are going to scream like banshees.
You mentioned upstate New York, and we've been talking for weeks about the governor having traveled and made upstate his strategy for improving the economic condition. And we have this referendum coming on casino gambling. Is this the fix, Alan? There's also a lawsuit right now going on because the language seems to suggest more benefits than the possible negatives in the ballot question.
Well, look, right now there are polls out there that say New Yorkers are saying, sure, let people go waste their money. And if it takes money away from my having to pay taxes, that's good. And it may well pass. I do think there's something to be said for it. Look, I'm not in favor of gambling. But if you get a place like, Ellenville or the Neville or one of these places that really has had tough times, and if it can bring it back to its heyday where people go and seek out a vacation there and the state gets some of it, I think a lot of people are going to see that it makes some sense. I think you're going to have problems, however, when people start to think it's coming to New York City. And you may remember that when Cuomo, who wanted them all upstate, had to concede to some New York City legislators that they could have casinos after several years down in New York City. And I don't think New Yorkers want that. They see what happened in some of the other places, all the benefits that we were supposed to see, we didn't see. Atlantic City never really bloomed under it. The casinos were there, but the surrounding areas weren't all that hot. So I think this could turn out to be very, very close. I know the Catholic Church is going to oppose gambling on moral grounds, bingo aside. Nevertheless, there are going to be some very powerful forces opposed to it.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok.
Listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. The federal government shutdown is garnering fierce criticism from Democrats, including Congressman Bill Owens. He's the Democrat from New York's 21st district, and he held a conference call with reporters from the region this week to talk about the potential repercussions. Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley was on the line and filed this report.
New York's 21st congressional district comprises more than 16,000 square miles of northern New York, from the St. Lawrence River in the west to Lake Champlain in the east. Owens said the most immediate and serious problems in the wake of the government shutdown will occur at the district's largest military installation, Fort Drum.
We have a significant number of civilian employees at that installation. It is a unit that is still at war. These folks are critical to the accomplishment of that mission. We're seeing some significant furloughs there. At least temporarily, the furloughs affect about a third of the employees. However, as this plays out and the training exercises are completed, that number or percentage could change dramatically. And I think that the way in which the civilian workforce has been treated is abominable in this particular situation.
Owens anticipates that as the shutdown continues, there will be heightened problems for veterans applying for new benefits and seniors seeking Medicare and Medicaid, local workforce investment boards, and attempts to contact federal agencies. He said there would be no impact at the U.S.-Canadian border, nor with mail delivery. The major bone of contention for the Republicans is the Affordable Care Act, often referred to as Obamacare. Owens acknowledges that changes should be made to the law, but criticizes Republican tactics.
Do I think that there are things that need to be changed? Absolutely. I said that when I voted for it. But the position that our friends on the other side have taken is this is not an exercise in making it better. This is an exercise in knocking it out. And since there is nothing to replace it, it seems irresponsible to me to walk down that path. If, in fact, they were offering a series of changes that we might debate, I'd be happy to have that conversation.
Owens points directly to a cadre of Republicans for creating the shutdown crisis.
You may have read that Congresswoman Bachman has said that what the conservative wing of the Republican Party wanted to accomplish was a government shutdown, and they've done it, and they're happy about it. So that tells me that those folks are not governing responsibly. We're in a situation where a relatively small group of people, and I know lots of good, solid, rational Republicans who are prepared to do a sensible, rational bill. And unfortunately, Mr. Boehner is being negatively impacted by a small group of people who are able to control the agenda and have really ground the process to a halt, which I think is absolutely irresponsible.
Owens believes the impasse will continue as the deadline for Congress to vote on the debt ceiling approaches.
Because people are not talking seriously about how to solve the overall problem. And that's really what we need to get back to. We need to be able to sit down and have conversations, and people seemingly are unwilling to do that.
Franklin County Republican Committee Chair Roland Thomas acknowledges there is a split within the Congressional Republican Caucus, but also believes the GOP was forced to make a stand.
It's unfortunate for the folks that work for the government that aren't going to be getting a paycheck, but we have to live with less. We have to live within our means. Every day, people across the country got to live within their means. But when it comes to government, it seems to just be out of control. I'm not happy with the shutdown. I don't think anyone is. But I think it's something that had to happen. And we had to make a stand sooner or later, and I think they did.
Downstate New York Republican Congressman Peter King told MSNBC there are meetings among Republican lawmakers today aimed at resolving the stalemate over the shutdown. King also said that he senses an increasing number of House Republicans are growing weary of what he called, quote, the Ted Cruz wing of the party, unquote.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
With the public referendum on casino gaming just weeks away, new polls indicating New York voters are keen on building more state-run casinos are being questioned by anti-gambling groups. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas explains.
It is anticipated that Governor Andrew Cuomo's proposed amendment that would give the go-ahead for new casinos to open in areas outside those where Native American gaming facilities operate in New York could spur $1 billion in economic development. David Blankenhorn with the Institute for American Values says that particular number comes from a lobby group, the New York Gaming Association, not from independent studies, and he predicts the opposite will occur.
There is not a single independent study that shows that casinos contribute to economic growth. And the overwhelming evidence is that casinos actually retard economic growth.
In a survey underwritten by a group trying to bring a casino to the former Neville Hotel Resort in Ulster County, pollsters asked if the casino should be built in a resort destination outside of any city. 69% of those polled replied in favor. Blankenhorn disputes claims that the casinos will be resort destinations. When asked whether they support or oppose passing an amendment to the state constitution to allow non-Indian Las Vegas-style casinos to be built in New York, voters are evenly divided, 46% to 46%, according to a new Siena College poll of New York voters. Here's pollster Steve Greenberg.
Last month, there was a plurality in support of the amendment, 49% to 42%. But then we followed it up and we gave the actual wording that people will see when they walk into their polling place on November 5th. And we told voters what the wording on the ballot that they would see said, which includes for the legislated purposes of jobs, new revenues for local governments, increased aid for school aid, etc. And then we asked them, would they vote to pass that amendment or not? And by a 55 to 42% margin, voters said yes, they would pass that casino amendment.
In the Neville poll, 53.8% of about 800 residents in the Mid-Hudson Valley polled said they support Governor Cuomo's amendment to open new casinos. Officials with Neville investors argue a casino at the old hotel in Ellenville would create many jobs and spark the local economy. By a 74 to 24% margin, voters polled by Siena agree that legalizing casinos will create thousands of jobs. They agree casinos will generate new revenues for the state and localities, 65 to 31%. They agree 57 to 42% New York has enough gambling outlets already. And they agree casinos will increase societal problems, 55 to 44%. David Blankenhorn believes they will attract low-wage workers, retirees, and minorities, people who are already struggling to stay afloat economically.
This is not about jobs. This is not about helping upstate New York. This is about money for the government. It's about money that the politicians don't have to call a tax.
Governor Cuomo, who championed the casino bills in the legislature, says the argument about the merits of gambling casinos and whether more should be allowed in New York is really over.
We already have gambling. We just don't call it gambling. We have casinos. We call them racinos, and you have to go through that whole conversation. But I think it passes, but it's a sophisticated argument, no doubt.
Blankenhorn is hoping there will be more discussion among voters leading up to the November 5th referendum.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
Listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. The New York State Department of Environmental Conservation has announced an agreement with the New York City Department of Environmental Protection to reduce the impact of discharges into an Ulster County water body. The consent order awaits the signature of New York City officials before going into effect. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn with more.
The DEC recently announced the agreement with the DEP to reduce the impact of discharges from the Ashokan Reservoir into the lower Esopus Creek. The agreement is in the form of a consent order, which has not yet been released, pending the signature of the New York City Comptroller. Here's DEC spokesman Peter Constantakis.
This has gone down to the New York City Comptroller. When he signs it, it's basically just a formality then that it would come back here to see if there were any changes or whatever, and it would be signed here and then basically take effect. And then some of the measures within it would be triggered at certain dates. For example, there is a study that would be done, and basically that would probably start within 60 days of the signed agreement.
That study would be overseen by the DEC. It requires New York City to perform an environmental review of DEP releases from the Ashokan Reservoir, and the public will have the chance to review draft studies and offer input. Also under the agreement, DEP will be required to reduce the duration of any turbid releases or muddied water to the Esopus Creek and limit turbidity in releases that are intended to reduce storm flows downstream of the Ashokan Reservoir. Ulster County Executive Mike Hine has been calling for DEP to pay attention to the turbidity problems in the lower Esopus. He says the consent order is a positive development.
It is a step. Now, the question really is, the devil's going to be in the details. We want to make sure that the people in both the upper Esopus and lower Esopus are protected, our environment is protected. There's clearly pieces of this that have the ability to potentially provide real benefit for our community. Now the question is going to be implementation.
He says one benefit is flushing the creek with more clear water. As DEC's Constantakis explains, the agreement dictates that lower levels of turbidity trigger such clear water releases.
What we're trying to do is, at lower levels of turbidity, which we think are still too high, what will happen is water will be released, and there's different triggers.
Michael Warren is supervisor of Marbletown, one of the lower Esopus municipalities affected by turbid releases. He says at Tuesday's town board meeting, he expects approval of the following resolution.
And Marbletown is interested in exploring the possibility of entering into an agreement with the other municipalities to form a coalition of lower Esopus communities to negotiate on behalf of Marbletown and the other affected municipalities issues and concerns regarding the lower Esopus Creek and watershed. This partnership has the authority to conduct public hearings, do surveys.
He says he anticipates all lower Esopus communities to vote in favor of joining the coalition. Saugerties Town Supervisor Kelly Myers says she was frustrated that press releases announcing the consent order were released ahead of any signed consent order, especially with the State Department of Health's draft revisions to New York City's 2007 filtration avoidance determination, currently out for public comment until October 15th.
The two documents go hand in hand. We need to extend the filtration avoidance determination comment period until at least we can read the consent order. I think this is just outrageous. It's another backdoor deal by New York State. You know, it's a couple people in a room making a handshake, and you know, we get the information they feed us. I think it's really, really a terrible injustice.
The so-called FAD would allow DEP to avoid building a filtration system for the Catskill-Delaware watershed, yet does not address turbidity in the lower Esopus because, as state officials have said, the lower Esopus lies outside the New York City watershed. Many officials, therefore, were awaiting the consent order to address issues concerning the lower Esopus. A statement released by DEP Commissioner Carter Strickland says the proposed modifications to the draft consent order are an important step for New York City and DEP's neighbors along the lower Esopus Creek.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies are available. Call 1-800-323-9262. That number again, 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1340. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at the same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.